Hello. welcome to Eyes on Gilead Live at the... Thank you. Yeah, that was a cue. An SBS podcast dedicated to The Handmaid's Tale. There is a lot going on in this show, and we think it helps to talk it out. And we also think it helps to talk it out with 400 people when it all wraps up. I am Fiona Williams, and I'm head of curation at SBS On Demand. And it is my thrill to introduce my friends, colleagues, and fellow resistors. So please give them a mighty cheer as they come out. Ms. Haiti Island, channel manager. Natalie Hambley, journalist turned gemologist, and Sana Kadar, host of... host of All in the Mind podcast on ABC Radio National. Girls, shall we?
Thank God.
Oh my God. Who do we think we are? Look at us. State Library of New South Wales in the Serena Joy and Gabriel Wharton Centre for Kids Who Can't Read Good. And we want to also shout out that Serena practically lived in this library as a child, apparently. She told us in that proposal episode. And speaking of Serena, we have to say a big thank you to our friends of the show, Yvonne Strahovski, who sent a big warm welcome. She knows we're here today. And to Dana Reid, director of multiple episodes, including the Holly episode, which gets us every single time. We're going to have a bonus episode interview that Haiti and I did. Had a chat to Dana Reid last week.
She was fantastic.
Yes. And Bruce Miller also, I don't know, maybe you noticed, he dropped a little warm wish in the chat on Spotify. So thank you to Mr. Bruce Miller. He said he wishes he could be here. But look, we've been talking about this show for almost a decade. We probably will still talk about it for a decade, let's be honest, whenever we catch up. But we've done a lot of planning, we've done a lot of prep. But honestly, there is only one thing going through my mind right now.
I'll try not to fuck this up.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Yeah, wait for it. There we go. So we have all just rewatched the final episode of The Handmaid's Tale, season 6, episode 10, called The Handmaid's Tale. Did anyone pick the ending?
Yeah. Did anyone see that coming?
Yes, who's it?
Okay, a couple of murmurs.
Yeah, all right, fine.
I didn't.
And did the final episode give you closure, would you say? We've had a rewatch as well.
I've had a little bit of time to think about this now, and a lot of things that I really wanted to happen did not happen, and yet I do still feel a sense of closure. I do still feel like we got this fantastic finish to a series that has been so filled with pain and trauma and anger. It felt like a release to get this almost quiet episode of grace and peace and forgiving. So yes, I think it did give me closure.
I think at this point we've all seen kind of a mixed fan response online. Some people are feeling let down or flat. Other people like think it is a beautiful ending. I'm kind of with the, I think it's very fitting. Oh, someone's phone going off. I think it's a very fitting end because, you know, sure, we would have loved to have seen a Hannah reunion, but this is still, by and large, most of the US is still Gilead. Like, it is still a tall ask. I feel like it works for me. I really love the loop ending. I did, like I said in the previous episode, I did not see that coming. That still gets me every time.
Yeah, right. Yeah. How about you, Nat?
I love the ending. Like, I really loved it. And on the second watch, which I just did last night, I cried at all different bits that I didn't cry at the first time, which really surprised me. And I think they did such a beautiful job of wrapping up the whole show, which is a big ask when we all love it so much. We all care about it so much. We love the book. And of course, like, they have to also lead into the testaments, which also meant we were never going to see Hannah. So I really had to let that go because I know I discussed it a lot over the years. I really need Hannah. Natalie, that was never going to happen. Is that what you were missing out on, Haiti? Is that what?
Absolutely. That I think I had accepted we weren't going to get Hannah and get out of Gilead, but I really just wanted that last reunion of some sort, that last kind of face-to-face acknowledgement that they still knew each other, that, you know, mummies do come back. Mm. You know, I just needed that face-to-face.
We get ghosty Hannah in the final scene.
Yeah, ghost Hannah. They don't face each other, though. They're facing away. Oh,
yeah.
That's the best you're going to get.
Yeah. Yeah, for me, I cried more on the rewatch. I know I was a little bit, I need more time. I was thinking about it, but I really did. And the Janine scene got me on the rewatch. Damn it. And the June and Serena, like, I love that throughout the years we've mentioned that whole do you understand me banter they've had shouted and whispered and everything at the ages, and they didn't have to say it this time. I think they finally did, you know, there was understanding, and then there was see you later. Yeah, it was closure. Yeah, I loved the click at the end. Just was like, they really thought that through 10 years ago or whatever it was. And yeah, they have confirmed actually they did mine to the original audio. So yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it's absolutely beautiful. Does it reframe or sort of recontextualise anything of June's journey, just seeing the way that the journey we've been on with her, does the ending sort of help reframe things you had going into it?
I think there's this kind of legacy that's caught up in this arc that June goes on that I think harks back to the novel, to Margaret Atwood's novel, and it's this message that's embedded in the story about like vigilance and hope, that we cannot take for granted that the natural trajectory of society is democracy, is human rights, is inclusion, that if we aren't vigilant in upholding those things, that they slide away. And I think June's journey from like despair and anger into kind of hope for change through action is the kind of legacy and the takeaway for me in June's arc, is that you can't take these things for granted, but it's not good to despair. It is good to take action, find your community, fight back, and in that there's hope.
That's a message we really need right now, isn't it? Because I am, on reflection, I'm sort of feeling a little bit depressed because, okay, so the loop ending, brilliant, love it. But it has me.
Know what we mean when we say the loop ending, so that the ending loops back to season one, episode one.
Yeah. So, but then it has me thinking about the loops we are in general, in life, in human history, because Margaret Atwood did also say history, you know, repeats itself. And so I feel like we're seeing elements of that play out now. And so I've had some distance from the final show over the past week, I've been thinking more broadly about the loops we're caught in. You know, we say never again, there we go again. There's a woman in Georgia right now who is being treated as a human incubator. Adriana Smith is her name. And a black woman in America. And, you know, we saw that exactly play out in season 3 or 4 or whatever it was.
Matthew, yeah. So we talked to Dana Reed about that, by the way, in the bonus episode.
Right.
Her episode, yeah.
We just, like, we repeat these mistakes over and over, and you just wonder, do humans ever learn? Like, that's kind of where I've landed.
It's super depressing, Sana.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. Sorry.
Well, I think, like, when it started, we actually didn't know where it was going to end.
Yeah.
Because, like, after the first season, which just matched the book, from second season onwards, like, who actually knew what was going to happen? And it's kind of shocking how relevant the show has managed to continue to be despite COVID, despite the writer strikes and whatever else got in the way, to end up where we are now. And then, of course, Margaret Atwood threw in a book as well, just to, like, really mess things up. And it's like, and at the beginning of this season, I said that I wanted it, we actually disagreed, because I said I wanted it to end with a sense of hope.
You didn't want hope in TV shows.
You just, like, destroy me.
Yeah, I did, yeah. I want to feel it.
And I have to say, halfway through, I was like, I don't know where the hope is going to come from, but they did actually get me there, yeah.
Yeah, I think so. And definitely with the end, the sort of tell your story, I love in the final episode here, where it's kind of June spends the first while of the episode, she's quite despondent. Obviously, Hannah is much on her mind. She's reeling from Nick. And it's kind of, she's got what she wanted, but
it's absolutely not what she wanted in that Hannah's not there, but, you know, at least it's a part of it. But she actually gets to take a minute and see, okay, other people are doing the Mayday thing, Luke's up and at him. And so then it's kind of like, okay, but things are happening, but also who's going to remember this? So that's, yeah, I like that the telling your story is made a more meaningful kind of thing than just wrapping it, things up nice and neatly so that we all get to go, oh, that was amazing, ending TV show. It still manages to be inspiring. So, yeah, that whole circularity for me as well, yeah, you can, the circles throughout this series all the way through, the way it all mirrors each other constantly, and you have to go back and rewatch, and you have to go back and rewatch again to just hear those points, and those points land when they're said differently and when different people say the same lines, and it's just kind of like these echoes through history, but the history of this show. But yeah, pointing to that broader point is, love it. Love it. We absolutely want your questions in a little while as well. We want to hear what you think of the show that we all love.
On that, can I just complete. Throw to the... I actually want to get a sense of in the room. You know, so I mentioned, like, the fan reaction has been a bit mixed online. I'm curious to know, with a show of hands, like, who loved the ending? And was anyone quite... Okay, loved. Hands up if you loved. Okay, that's a good amount in the room. Hands up if you felt a little bit like... Okay.
Right, it's like 50-50. That's a good split. Okay.
Is anyone, because we didn't get Hannah?
Yeah.
That's good. Yeah, wrong show.
Just me.
Yeah. No. Like, what moment from the finale hit you the hardest?
Do you know what I've realised after the show came out, like the final episode came out, and then I've been reading all the press interviews that the cast have been doing? I didn't pick this up on my first watch, but so June says, "Mommy's always come back" to Hannah in her imagined flashback. And that's exactly the line she says to baby Noah in episode one of this season as well on the train. She says, "Mommy's always come back" when Serena has gone somewhere to get
the bathroom.
Oh, yeah, she's in the bathroom. And so that's a callback to that. And it's just so beautiful. I love, again, the loops. I love how they seed these things early on that you don't really catch, but they come back to. And you only really catch it if you're really paying attention. And, so that the mommy's always come back. Because now, especially when we started this podcast and show, I wasn't a mother. And so now I don't know if I could have watched it the first time around if I had a child. Yeah, it hits different. Like, that's what I'll say. It just hits different when you have a kid and you think, oh, my God, someone could rip him away in some alternate imagined...
I have... I've got a son, and he has always been the same age as Hannah. Mm. So, yeah, so, like, when the show started, like, when we started doing this, he was, like, he was the same age. And now, because of all the gaps in the show, he now is about to turn 14. And I'm just like, oh, my God, this is the age that Hannah is, and we know what sort of life she's leading. And, like, I can't
How did you go with that first season?
Oh, my God, it was so hot.
I rewatched it this morning. I was watching season one, episode one, and watching that scene where Hannah is ripped away, thinking, God, if I had my child, then I don't know if I could have made it.
Look, I didn't even like it in the finale. The part that I found hard was when she loses little Hannah at the fair. That just brings out all of my, like, mother anxiety. So when you watched that and I was overhearing it, I was not paying attention to it. That's too much.
There is a little bit of that transferring of our feelings about Hannah and June onto other children in the story, and I think this definitely happened for me when Janine got her daughter back, Charlotte. I think that was the big moment for me in that episode that I got the most upset over. And I think it was the two reasons. I mean, the first is that so many horrible things have happened to Janine over the course of the series. She's, like, always been the handmaid that's really copped it when maybe June's kind of gotten away with it. Janine never gets away with it. Yeah. So much bad Gilead business has come her way. Just seeing something good happen to her was such a release. And there was also that element of that reunion between her and her daughter kind of carried the weight of every separated or displaced person in Gilead. So, you know, I was crying for June and Luke and Hannah and Emily and everyone else who had lost people or who hadn't been reunited. So that was my big moment.
Yeah. And I saw online, I don't know if it was actually someone who left a comment for us or I read it, but with the Janine thing, some people were a little upset that she didn't get her own moment of walking out, and it was that she was, you know, quite almost broken down by the bastards, ground down by the bastards as she came across. But, yeah, and I see that. But it's like, of course that's how Janine, you know, she has been... She was the one who, you know, as much as you don't want the bastards to grind you down, they were getting
It's
real
not
close.
Like everyone's going to escape Gilead fine. You know, someone will be ground down by Gilead. Yeah. And so Janine sort of stands in for that role.
But it's so nice she falls into the arms of June.
Absolutely. Yes.
She falls into the arms of her friend. It's beautiful.
I mean, it's a miracle they all survived alive, right? Like, that's what we've been saying season, that someone more has got to die, but they made it out, so they got to be a little bit broken, some of them.
That's right, yeah, but... Broken, not busted completely. But
something tells me Janine's going to be okay, though. Like,
oh yeah,
everything she's gone through, I kind of feel like she's going to be good.
She'll get it.
She's going to be okay.
Yeah, she's got Charlotte. Baby Charlotte. For me, it's always been the Holly storyline. So the fact that we got her back because she, you know, we never really did have that closure. But then for her to come back in the finale for me was huge. She's always been the one for me. Yeah, like as you say, I hadn't had children before. I lost my mum as we were making this podcast in one of our first weeks, actually. I guess maybe that's why Holly hits harder. But, it just to have her back and to have them in the Boston Globe office where June had originally pieced together the history, and those were kind of such Holly moments, that those episodes where it was kind of like, oh, you're always there, like the Gilead creep. But Holly was always watching, and she'd taken June to, you know, reclaim the night marches and, just kind of this feisty first wave feminist. That Holly, for her to be there and for to hear June's respect for her and for her to give it back and for June to hear that from her mum was like, that'll do. And if you could add one more scene.
Just one.
Would you, or what would it be?
It would be Nick saying, I'm sorry, Jesus. I made the wrong decision. I'm Forgive me, I'll come back and make it all right.
Is that what you're saying?
Thank you, Nick. He has risen.
Look, I really wanted to see a Hannah moment. If the reunion wasn't going to happen, I wanted to see, as I said, because of my son who's that age, I kind of wanted to check back in with what's happening with all of those 14-year-olds who are now being primed for the next wave of horror that they are about to graduate into. And I just wanted to get a glimpse of them at least, just something, anything. So if I could add a scene, I'd add that.
Better answer.
I think mine was also a Hannah scene. I envisaged a scene where Hannah is having an argument with her Gilead parents over some childhood injustice, like packing for the move to Washington or something.
Mm.
Just to give us a glimpse of the fighting spirit in girl that she's inherited from her mother and her grandmother. Just something to leave us with.
A bit of lip from Hannah.
Yeah, Hannah lip.
yeah. Or like, do you understand me or something too?
To Mrs.
That'd be great. Bruce Miller listens, you might just tack it on. I don't know. I did in our recap pod say that I thought there was maybe a bit too much Luke in the finale one. Who said yes? Yes, someone said yes. Thank you. I'd add a Moira, I think. Because she was in the imagined karaoke scene, of course, and she was at the bonfire, but she didn't really get to say much. And it's been such a big season for Moira, who we've kind of wanted to have her time. And, you know, she got to have a life. She wasn't, you know, echoing June's life this time. Yeah, I wanted her to tell the story of how she's going to go lead Mayday rather than have Luke tell it about her. So that was what I would do.
One thing I will say about that Luke scene, which I sort of said in our last record, I'm glad we got a sense of where they leave it between the two of them. What I actually really appreciate is, you know, all season slash series, we've been like, Nick or Luke, Nick or Luke, like this love triangle. And I love actually that in the end, there is no triangle. She's not with either man. It's not a thing. She's going forth on her own. And so, like, I think that frisson and that love triangle stuff was interesting for a little while, and it, like, led us along in one element. But I like at the end that it kind of, it's that's not a thing. We don't need her with anyone. But she's still loved. But yes.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
It's funny you say that because I've, in my head, I've drawn this, and stay with me, I've drawn this kind of parallel between The Handmaid's Tale and Disney movies.
Okay. So, like a Brothers Grimm fairy tale.
Because over the decades, the Disney princess movie has evolved, right? It used to be about a young woman coming of age, finding a romantic love interest and then marrying that man, it was always man, and living happily ever after. And Disney's moved from that model of the kind of romantic story through to, it's a similar love story, but it's moved to kind of a familial love and reconciliation. So it's about a young woman coming of age, breaking away from her family, going out into the world, and then somehow like reconciling with that family towards the end. I'm thinking of like Moana and Encanto and, you know, all the movies I'm watching with my young children.
Someone's
at the moment.
Frozen in the audience.
Yeah, Frozen. That was a transition movie. It's got a little bit of both.
New podcast.
My thesis on Disney films coming. But yeah, so there's this thread through The Handmaid's Tale of this beautiful love story of Nick and this like romantic ideal and will they end up together, and, you know, and it doesn't come about. It's skewed. He doesn't turn out to fulfill that ideal. But what we have instead is the June and Holly reunion. And I think there's that just like really beautiful moment in the last episode that you were just talking about where they've had that argument in early seasons in one of those crucial flashbacks with June and her mother, where June is confronting her mother about not being there when she was a child, about always being out at protests, always like fighting for women's rights and forgetting about her own daughter. And then they have this circular conversation about exactly the same thing in the last episode. June's doing that and leaving her daughter with her mother, and they finally see each other and have that moment where they kind of reconcile, they understand each other. So it's the Disney evolution transposed onto
I see it.
And I'll give it to you.
So what are you going to miss? What are you going to miss about this show?
Okay. Look, not the trauma, to be honest. But what I will miss is actually seeing so many female characters in one TV show in leading roles. And they're so complex as well. Like, some are heroes and some are villains. But even within that, like, June has pissed us off over the years and she's made decisions and we're like, what are you doing and why are you doing that? And I love that she's had fights with her husband, fights with her best friend, you know, she's just, so she's kind of a hot mess, but she's still our hero. But then we have Serena, who has just been this like terrible villain. Lydia has been a terrible villain. I've loved watching them all. And yes, there are male characters in there, but they're always a bit secondary to me. And now I watch other TV and I'm like, why are all these men here? Like, now I've got to go back to man TV. You know, I'm like, oh.
And on that, I guess I know a lot of people found it really hard going because, it doesn't flinch. And that's what I leaned into. I loved it. Like, it really got in the body and it got in the mindset of someone who, whereas in a lot of other TV, the women in those positions are kind of the body of the week in a procedural kind of TV show or something. You're never actually aligned with the person. You know, it's kind of the investigation or the perpetrator or something. And it like this really gets you in the situation. And, you know, I think we had to stay in that to just kind of get the sense of that and then the mindset of what that inspires within you as you're trying to flee. So, yeah, I just love the angle of this and just the craft of the way it's made. I love it. The quality of the writing and the production and the, you know, we've had the pleasure of talking to a lot of the people behind the scenes in Handmaids, you know, from the production design to the music. We had that, I love that episode that where we really went to town with Adam Taylor and he just talked about his beautiful melancholy music, which still gets me when I'm hearing, I heard you rewatching it. It was like, Yeah, just the quality of the work that goes into this show, I really am going to miss that. So.
Going to miss the dusty, slanted light in all the scenes. No, actually, yeah. My serious answer is what I'm thinking right now is not an answer I expected for what I'll miss, but I think it's Serena's character, which I've never... You know, you've been a Serena fan, Haiti, but I've not really been a Serena fan. But actually where I am now is she is such a compelling character, and it's such, like, wish fulfillment through her, and that, like, if you think about the worst person you've ever met in your life, and, like, you try to psychoanalyze them, and you're like, will you ever know you're such an awful person? Will you ever grapple with your shittiness? You probably won't. You'll be above it. But whereas with Serena, we get to see a really horrible person come to terms with what they've done, and it's deeply satisfying and heartbreaking. Like, it's all these things in there. So I kind of, yeah, I feel like Serena's weirdly what I'll miss.
Yeah, she has been such a good character and, like, evolved through the years. Like, you know, she was just kind of, you know, the archetype of sort of a gorgeous woman who's things will always work out for her, as June says. But, yeah, and I really felt the finale resolution.
Yeah.
For her very much.
So did I, because I've been quite cynical about Serena for a long time, and I actually can't believe that they managed to sell it for me. Because I kind of wrote her off as being just this awful person who was never going to change. And I found it really interesting to read that apparently Bruce Miller's plan for the season was to have her die in the first episode.
Mm.
So that, like, when she was pushed out of the train, he really wanted that to be her, she's done. And apparently, like with Yaelin and Eric, who were in charge of this season, they had to really fight with him and bring an argument to him of why she should be able to stay. And I think, look, and so I've now been thinking about that. I'm like, how different would the season have been if Serena was often episode one? And part of me is like, would have been amazing. Like, it would have been so shocking. And we would have been like, who's next? You know, it would have been like a whole different season. But I am actually, like, super grateful that they did actually keep her, because I really, really enjoyed watching her finally get it. Like, she and hats off to Yvonne, a Western Sydney girl.
She was amazing.
Oh my gosh, she really sold that like apology that she does. Like, I thought I'm there with you now. Like, you have finally gotten it. And also, I think these characters are now done with each other. Like, they kept colliding, because it's almost like June is the lesson that Serena had to go through. And as long as Serena wasn't getting it, June was going to keep coming back into her life again. And now that, like, Serena finally gets it, they don't need to be in each other's lives anymore. And so maybe it'll be like a once a year WhatsApp, how you going?
Yeah, till Noah grows out of his Red Sox onesie. And
They'll just notice each other, like watching each other's Instagram videos but never commenting. It'll be like, they'll be listening to the videos.
You see, she saw your story.
Well,
accidentally likes one of them once. Yeah.
Like a photo from way down the grid, like from years past.
Yeah, it's like 3 years old. And hang on a minute. How about you, Haiti?
Yeah, I think it was satisfying to see that arc come full and then have her kind of have that realization and that moment. Have the moment where she also works with June again. They work together to ignite that rebellion, to betray Wharton, to kill her husband. Yes, it was really satisfying. I feel like I don't have to go on about it because I've been tooting the Serena horn the seasons, despite it always being an uncomfortable horn to toot. But you're right, she's the most compelling character in that show for me, and always has been, I think, because she does remind us all of those things we see in the people around us and sometimes even in ourselves that we don't like to see, and she enacts them all. So seeing the hope for her humbling and her realization through that storyline was great to see.
Yeah.
And there's also something funny about the fact that everything about Gilead falls away from her, but she still kind of gets what she wanted in the end. She gets her baby, and in a way that's what Gilead was all there for. That was her involvement in Gilead, was to get a baby, and she got her baby. So there's this all other element that I think's makes her continue to be compelling in that she is a very privileged woman in this world, and she continues to come out on top in the end.
She always does. Like,
and that's, you know, the privileged people in our world rarely do get their comeuppance. They usually do get some element of what they've come in for, and I think that rang true.
But the irony is she didn't need Gilead to do that because she actually could have a child.
And yes, it was just needed to ditch Fred earlier.
Yeah, yeah. No, that kind of just underlying irony of it all, was it worth it? Well, yeah, when that twist happened, that, yeah, it was, that was a curious one that I mean, we can ask, maybe talk about storylines that maybe we need a little while to latch onto. But for me, that was one because it was, well, I mean, it was the only prediction I ever
got
right.
Her getting pregnant?
Yes.
Is that weird? Okay.
Yes, yes. It was the only one I ever got right when they had sex in the end of that, whatever that season was. It was like, she's going to get pregnant. But in our pre-season 6 recap, I know, Natalie, you mentioned that, like, the choice to cast younger, the Serena Joy character, to cast her younger as opposed to the book where she was sort of an older woman. It opened up so much story and made kind of that June and Serena dynamic so very compelling. You know, probably could have still been, but just that choice was so, so rich. Yeah, and I think to then have that twist that she can become a mother, it was a curious one because then I've sort of reflected on it with who else in the series has that kind of yearning that Serena had and the grief of not being able to have a child, because everyone else was sort of, the mothers in Gilead anyway that we saw, you know, mothers in Gilead, the wives, had that kind of, it almost was like a, to get status and power, and it was like to get the baby. And in, outside of Gilead, Canada, et cetera, the Alana.
Oh, yeah.
You know, kind of.
Second Serena.
Second Serena. I want to be Serena. The other want to be Serena. And the ladies in the playground who were a little bit handsy with Nicole. It was just kind of like that we didn't have a different character who had that grief. Yeah, that kind of was a curious one for me. But then to have it end like this, where it is Serena, ultimately she got what she wanted, didn't actually need Gilead to get that.
She did. Like, maybe it was all the good organic produce that those poor women in the colonies, you know, there was something in the air, I don't know.
Save
her gunshot wound to the pelvis healed over the course of Gilead meant she could get pregnant somehow. We always thought that was the story of her infertility, right? Like the gunshot wound.
When she got shot.
That's why she couldn't.
Mm. I forgot that. Yeah,
I remember being so confused. How is she pregnant? I thought. Yeah. Anyways.
Yeah.
But I think there's a lesson there for Serena that I'm kind of quite amused by, which is she spent this whole season wanting to be a do-gooder. Like, she always wants to do good. She always wants to be doing something. She can't, and that's why she goes back to New Bethlehem. She wants to do that fertility center. She wants to, like, help people. She wants to help them. And
be good.
And now it's just like, lady, just do nothing. Like, honestly, whenever you help, it just hurts. So, like, things. And so in my mind, like, her baby's going to go to school and she's going to be one of those, like, PNC moms. Like, she's going to be getting involved. It's going to be a thing. Good luck, ladies.
Going Grace. Are there any storylines for you that maybe you needed a little, it took you a minute to kind of go with? Or
can we talk about Nick?
I think we have to talk about Nick.
We have to talk about Nick.
We have to talk about Nick. I know there's a lot of also fan reaction to the Nick thing. Some people are very, very upset.
Yeah.
I've been trying to think through Nick's evolution. And I think his choices make sense when you think about his background and his context. So, like, this was a guy who had no daddy. His mommy died when he was young. He had no sense of belonging and place and purpose. And he says to June, you know, I was just bagging groceries. So he needed, Gilead gave him a sense of brotherhood, belonging, purpose, all of that. Then he met June. She gave him a sense of purpose and belonging. But then as June left for Canada and he decided he couldn't go for whatever reason, I think partly why he didn't go to Canada is the purpose and belonging thing, where, you know, in Canada he would be a refugee. He would be a nobody again. He'd probably be bagging groceries again. And I think the draw of what Gilead offered in terms of belonging was probably too big. And then, you know, once June She kept going back and forth, and he would keep sticking out his neck for her with diminishing returns for him. So I think I'm not justifying anything he did. I'm just trying to, like, think through the psychology of what led him to make the decisions he made. And so, and then as he grew status in Gilead, that's harder and harder to give up, and it gave him something. And I think he felt like a good guy because he was trying to be good on the inside. So, like, that justified it for him as well. But I think the draw of belonging, purpose, family was too big for him. And that's why he made the decisions he made.
So you say evolution of Nick. I think, like, because it stood out. And going back, I checked the Boston Globe episode that I love so much, keep talking about that in season two. There is the clip, because she's at the newspaper, June's listening to some of the investigative reporters' tapes of back in the day, and there's interviews about men who joined the Sons of Jacob, and it's very much Nick's story, and it's kind of like, you know, they sought out men who, you know, had broken homes, and that's kind of a clue there about Nick wedded back in season two. But yeah, like, he joined Sons of Jacob. I think he was just always, I don't think it was an evolution. I think he was just always that guy that we just never saw it, because, like, he loved June. I'm not going to deny that, but that's just not enough. He thought that was enough within the world of being a Gilead guy, and he had his revolutionary girlfriend on
Mayday
the side.
In many ways, though, throughout.
To get June out, though.
Yeah.
Nick. The thing, like, I've always liked him for the same reason that I think Bruce mentioned he liked that character, was to give June a little bit of happiness in such a bleak, bleak world, to give June something. And so we saw this all through her eyes, and I have also, like, latched on to that little bit of happiness as well, and I quite like eye candy in my TV shows as well, Simi. But what I find really interesting is, like, part of me really hates that we're talking about Nick, you know, that he's taking up so much room. But the way that his character ended... But the way that his character ended, we've been forced to talk about him, but I also find this really interesting because where the show started and what the discussion was around equality for women and where the discussion is now, the show was always just weirdly just so on point. And what we're talking about now and the conversation now is masculinity and, you know, where are all the men going and what's happening with, like, young men, and now we're just seeing this male character and we're just like, we're trying to grapple with, how did he get this way? Is he actually a good guy or a bad guy? Like, could this have been reversed? You know, like, we're now grappling with the whole Nick thing, and I think as a society, we're grappling with the whole, like, lost men thing. Mm.
Yeah. Can we do another hand poll? Who's devastated / upset about the Nick storyline? Oh, yeah, okay.
Couple.
Yeah. People. All right, couple, all right. Couple. Yeah. Who's fine with it?
There we go. There we go.
Mostly everyone.
And what other storylines? Anyone else's storylines take a little while to latch on to?
I think it took me a while to work out how, I guess, I think we all felt this way, how we felt about Lawrence when he entered at the end of season two. Because he came in as this dissenter of sorts within Gilead, but he is still absolutely an architect of Gilead. He was, like, the key economist, I think. But he kind of led this little pocket of unconventionality within Gilead. But he was, for all intents and purposes, kind of a misogynist to June at the start, and we didn't really know how to read him. He was deliberately played ambiguous. His, like, love of obnoxious 80s pop music and, like, key scenes where women are going through trauma and things like that. So I think he was a character I found really hard to read for a long time. But I think it's interesting that his arc is kind of the opposite of Nick's, where Nick is kind of the fall of a quote-unquote good man, someone who didn't really have much direction, allowed himself to be led away from his humanity and told himself he didn't have a choice, but he did. Whereas Lawrence is someone who's kind of disconnected from his humanity at the start. He's a theorist and an economist and is privileged enough to remove himself from his humanity. And I think it's the death of Eleanor, his wife. It's kind of the way he connects with June as a person, and how their friendship grows and how he connects with Angela or Charlotte. as a child in Gilead all reconnects him to his humanity, and he kind of redeems himself by using that as a trigger to rebel, to dissent.
I think ultimately, look, he's a great actor, and he got amazing lines in which he could deliver, like, it's hilarious. But ultimately, his character did end up sacrificing something, which was his life, you know, whereas Nick didn't really sacrifice anything. And so that is the problem. Like, he should have sacrificed his comfort to, at the very least, leave, you know. But I think that's why, because I've always hated Lawrence so much, and I could never forgive. Like, I enjoyed watching him. He's a great character, amazing. But I could never forgive him. Like, he did so much worse than Nick ever did, you know? Like, he actually was the architect of Gilead. Like, fuck that guy. So I'm like, why am I crying now that he's dying? But, like, at least he did actually sacrifice himself. And I think that's what got him there.
I am wondering now, actually, just thinking about it, how much having Charlotte / Angela changed for him. And actually, if you think about it, Nick and Lawrence are both men with daughters, but having a daughter didn't really seem to move Nick in any particular. Barely asked about her. Really. Whereas, you know, once Angela / Charlotte arrives in Lawrence's home, I wonder how much that played a role in his decisions at the end.
I remember hearing Bradley Whitford in an interview mention that, I don't think this is ever explicitly said, but he always imagined that somewhere in the past between Eleanor and Lawrence, there was like the loss of a child or some inability to have
children. She alludes to it. She mentions it in an earlier season. Okay. Yeah.
And so I feel like there's something there about this kind of deep grief about losing a child and then having this child kind of brought into your life again as a second chance.
Mm. Yeah. And I guess that scene at Jezebel's with Janine and Lawrence, where she, I think it plants the seed about Charlotte as well, where she's only okay if you're around, early in season 6, I guess it was. Yeah, that you see that sort of fledgling relationship, and then that obviously he's not going to be around, is he? Yes, but with Lawrence, across the season we've kind of been talking about who's been tinkering around the edges of Mayday, like the Gilead core cast. Aunt Lydia had been tinkering a little bit around the edges. Serena had definitely been tinkering a little bit around the edges. But Lawrence...
Very far edges.
Yeah. Yeah, like she'd sort of been looking over the fence at Mayday. But Lawrence, early when we first met him, like you say, he was just a little bit oddball, had that very boho chic house. And he was tinkering around the edges, in being amused by challenging women living in his household, but not actually having any fingerprints on anything of what they were doing. And, like, you know, when there was someone who'd been injured into the basement, who, you know, get that out of here. I don't want any traces of that. And of course he fled when it was coming down to it in the plane one. Season 3, that finale. Yeah, he was out of town, didn't make it. But so that whole tinkering. But then I guess Serena coming to their doorstep that dark and stormy night with the ceremony. Yeah, and losing Eleanor and June got him finally over the line. So RIP Joseph Lawrence. Thanks for your service, eventually. We've done a few characters. Who haven't we touched on whose arc we kind of want to talk about? Lydia, yes. Aunt Lydia.
Esther, thank you, Esther.
Oh, yes. Yeah, sure.
Oh, Naomi, yeah.
Yeah, Esther, the last we saw of her, she was chained to the bed when she was pregnant to Putnam.
Casualty of Gilead.
She had that baby now because it was 2 months that June was in.
We had the 2-month skip.
Yeah, remember? Yeah, so I miss. Look, we didn't come back to Esther at all, but look, it's not going to be good, is it? So maybe.
Yeah, I know.
Maybe we should be relieved.
But Lydia, obviously we're getting a load more Lydia in the testaments. But, yeah, we got the symbol of who she's going to become.
What I loved about Lydia's story is just I love how long it took for her to get there in the end.
Longer than Serena, you're right.
Yes, yeah. Like, she really clung on. Like, and she was trying so hard. Like Serena and Lydia both were trying so hard. Like, Serena at one point is mad at June. You just won't forgive me. And June is like, I just can't. And then Lydia is pretty much doing the same thing to Janine. Here's my cookies, you know, and she just like, it's just, they were trying, but it wasn't in the right way and it wasn't enough. And honestly, it just took Lydia, it's taken her so long, like the entire season to finally get there. So her moment when they're all about to be hung was, yeah. I was like, she nailed it. Like it was really, really great. Like she finally came through and came through in the final episode with, so clearly, Lydia has been doing some work now. Like we can actually see in those very final moments that not only does she now get it, but she's actually done something. She actually managed to get Naomi to do the right thing and hand over Charlotte. So, yeah, what an evolution of that character, because, man, season one, season two, Lydia, oh, my God. Push her off a train.
Yeah, right. I wondered how they were going to land that with the testaments coming because, you know.
Well, we saw seeds of it throughout, didn't we? She was witnessing things that are making her take pause. And, yeah, we kind of had the crumbs along the way, I think. So the plane landed nicely for me.
It did. It did.
There was a lot of mixed metaphors in there, crumbs and planes and, yeah.
Yeah. No. It did. And I think they have adjusted the timeline of the testament. So it's, you know, it's a shorter 4 or 5 years. So that, yeah. Because, yeah, when that book came out, it was kind of like, hang on a minute. Things that Lydia needs to have done by now should have happened in The Handmaids if that's going to land. But, yeah, I think they've obviously worked around that adaptation. Who is another character? Janine, we sort of touched on. Is there more Janine you have to say?
I think it's that mother-daughter relationship she has with Lydia that really is the making of kind of Lydia's radicalization. So I just like how they're threading in that mother relationship.
Doesn't it really suck again that it takes someone to feel it? Like she only has gotten there because she loves Janine. And it's like when you couldn't love everyone else, you know, like you had to be experiencing it yourself to feel the full effect of Gilead for it to finally hit home for her. But look, if anyone's going to do it to you, like Janine is, I think, like always my heart, my favourite character. So I'm very, very grateful to Lydia now. I'm like, thank you, lady. She finally came through. But I think they've done a nice job, as you said, of getting us to the testaments to get, because I actually now would like to see Lydia. I'm now keen to see what she's going to do next.
Yeah, I'm quite jazzed for the testaments. I can't wait for that to come out. Yeah. I want more, Lydia.
That's right. And oh, just that Lydia backstory that we got that episode back in the day of, that little hint of Lydia Clements with her relationship with that single mum and her son who was, she'd been a family lawyer back in the day and then, yeah, then a school teacher. But yes, loved that backstory, was always wanting more, but that'll do. Who are other names that got yelled out then?
Rita,
yes, thank you, Rita. She got her holding the gun moment in the big episode 9. Well, that was good. Punched a guy in the, or shot the guy in the with the crane to get June down. Yes, amazing. Someone I have to say actually on the hanging, I had a doctor get in touch on.
Oh, good. Yeah. Great.
Thank you. They got in my mentions on Instagram and just wanted to respond to a comment about June's hanging from episode 9.
You're excited. I was like, the neck doctor, tell me.
Yeah.
What do you call a neck doctor, actually? You're not a neck
doctor. Not doctor, but yes, an anaesthetist, and I have to say that. Anaesthetist, oh, my God. From Queensland, thank you, Kat. And I think it's reasonable that she survived given the way they did it. Death from hanging usually happens by the initial drop, and I won't use my hands, due to hangman's fracture or from asphyxiation. They didn't drop her but pulled her up with the rope so she wouldn't have had a fracture.
I'm glad they were correct in how they organised this. I really appreciate that attention to detail. Yeah.
She also managed to get her hands in under the rope, which...
You've all been thinking about this.
That's right, yeah. Which would have helped reduce the risk of tracheal or laryngeal injury, which can also be fatal. She was up there for 35 seconds. I can't... Thanks to Rita's save, which is definitely survivable. I reckon yes, while suspension of disbelief was needed in some parts, maybe not this one. So thank you. Thank you, Kat Winkle.
That's so funny. Which that reminds me, in terms of fan comments on socials and things, there was someone on Reddit who commented about two of us potentially hating each other and that coming through in the pod. And we were laughing our heads off when we saw this because we were like, what are they hearing? Who do they think hates each other? We don't hate each other. But apparently two people on Reddit think. They were picking up on vibes, which was quite funny.
Maybe it was the Team Nick, Team Luke divide or something, getting to someone.
Gave us lots of giggles.
We split down the middle today.
Yeah. Us Nick people will stay over here.
That's right. Didn't plan that. We should say about the absolute... I need to get the audio from Jeremy, but the last one we recorded...
The very last episode we recorded of our chat... Are you talking about the hello laughing?
Yeah.
Do you want to explain it?
Well, okay. I mean, I don't know where this story's going to go because you had to be there, but Hayley said a weird hello as we were doing the intros, and then we just collected.
I think it was a 20-minute extended giggle.
Yeah.
Could not recover.
Yeah.
And finish the damn thing.
And then you were scared you would all say, because I was going in the order I always say it, and then you were all scared that that you were going to say the weird hello. Sorry, Hayley. I couldn't look at Hayden's name without cracking up. And then anyway.
I actually didn't say hello when I walked out today because I didn't want to re-trigger this incident.
And it could have.
Yeah, there was this real risk of it.
I think we're just feeling the feels after so many years of doing the show and talking about it and all the trauma and all the... Of it.
Yeah, we needed that.
Can I just say something about Rita?
Yes. Yeah, we've got a Rita. Sorry.
First of all, apologies, Rita. I really liked what we saw. There was a scene that she had at Serena's house in New Bethlehem, and she had a conversation with June, and she said, "We're not all like you, or we're not as like strong as you are, June. We're not like." Basically, she's saying like not all of us are built for the fight. And I say I really appreciate that element of Rita's character, and I like that she finally realized. I think like the point of the show this season has been for everyone to realize that they are a part of the fight, and that no one gets to be excused and that we should all be thinking of ourselves on the hook. And as weirdly enough, I can't believe that it's actually a male character that who's like one of his lines is the one I'm still thinking about, which is Tuello says the reason why he's doing what he's doing is because he doesn't want to leave it to the next generation, i.e. his son, to fix. And so it's like, this is our problem. This is our problem now. And we see that with Rita. Rita got it, you know, like, because in the beginning she was like, and you can't blame her. Like, you know, like she's finally out of Gilead. You just want to have a quiet life now, you know, but she does get back into the fight again in a brilliant way in episode 9.
And she got a reunion with her sister in New Bethlehem. So it was, you know, she got everything she wanted, but...
realised they weren't safe.
That's right.
Like, yeah.
Because of Nick. Fucking Nick. Let us all down.
Probably get to some Q&A shortly, I dare say. Yeah. We want to hear.
Oh, yeah.
That's right. Do we have our roving mic?
Oh, here we go. We've got a whole bunch of questions. Bron, over here.
Thank you.
Thank you. We're going to miss this so much. And I think this episode, there was an arc and, you know, a little bit of closure. But it actually, there were so many things undone and just made us hungry for more. So I guess my question is, are you going to do this again for the Testaments?
Thank you. Honestly, we don't know. We genuinely don't know. We've
We're trying to figure out whether we do anything else after this. Like we still need to talk about maybe we take this forward in a different way, talk about TV in general, maybe not. I don't know. We don't know yet. But as for the Testaments, I think that's an issue. We don't really know who the streamer is going to be and all that. But.
Yeah, they're still producing it. So it's just really early. So, you know, if we do, we'll certainly let you know. But thank you. Yeah, I'm absolutely watching it.
I'd like to keep talking to you guys in some form.
Yeah.
Hi, this is probably a question mainly to Hayley because of Team Serena. So when I was watching the final episode and she's in the refugee camp talking to Noah, and this is all I've ever wanted, and I just wonder where you come down on whether it's accepting where she is or trying to convince herself where she is. Because I reckon there's another rodeo round for Serena, so... Thank you, and I've loved every single episode. You guys are amazing. You've been my BFF, so thank you.
I love that different interpretation of it, because I definitely read it as acceptance, as she's finally accepting this. Because then I guess it feels like closure. But I think that's a really interesting point, that maybe she's still somewhere deep down trying to convince herself that this is okay. I love that.
I think it starts like that. I think the scene starts and then it, like, she's hearing herself and then she really looks at him, I think. Like, that was kind of how I saw that one. But great question. Thank you. Who else we got?
There's a Martha.
Oh, amazing.
First off, congratulations on the fabulous podcast, Eyes on Gilead, because I don't know, many probably do this, watch the episode, listen to the podcast, rewatch the episode. And one of the reasons I want to congratulate you is, and you can add something to this, perhaps Jeremy Wilmot, and you've just alluded to it a moment ago, that you are so succinct and you don't talk over each other. I thought, will I ever listen to four women talking about a TV show? And your ability to just pick things apart and also be honest when something is like, I don't get this, or offer the thing that I'm thinking about. I'm like, yeah. Oh, I hadn't thought of that. So congratulations for being able to offer so many different perspectives, but also the production of the podcast is brilliant. And Jeremy, I don't know if you have a microphone up there, but just admitting to the fact that you edited out 20 minutes of laughing, is there times when you do talk over each other and you realise we've got to, let's retake that and let's re-ask the question.
Poor Jeremy. Spare a thought for Jeremy. I don't want to go back and hear our first episodes, actually, because we absolutely did talk over each other.
For the first few seasons we were working out how to do this and we were definitely talking over each other and people commented about us talking over each other. And so we learned our lesson and we kind of in studio now have like a little bit of a hand wave system where we kind of like can see who wants to go next. And so we learned our lesson.
Okay, I'm going to indulge myself here again and just say that one of the other things that I was thinking of as you were talking today was the change in June and her ferociousness and then that more calm, measured approach to how she's going to go for Hannah. And in the cleanup that I did at Serena's wedding, I found some cake under the table, and so I'm about to give you a gift that your perhaps children can play with too.
Oh, amazing. Clay looks like the wedding cake. Oh, little clay cakes. Oh, it's so
cute. Oh, thank God.
That is so glorious.
Thank you very, very much.
Oh, it's beautifully designed.
Thank you so much.
I was so
God, oh, amazing.
I'm like floored. I can't believe the creativity and dedication. That's incredible.
Yeah, that. Thank you, Jane.
We've talked a lot about the characters, which I love. I'm just wondering, just a reflection I had, particularly watching the final season on some of the thematic elements as well. And I really felt coming across quite strongly, particularly from June, was this idea that she herself is very faith-driven. And I thought it was real, and I can't really remember if she's quite that explicit about it in other seasons, but there's a lot of, you know, going grace and, you know, Godspeed. And I just wondered what your reflections were on this way of not demonising faith and religion in and of itself, but showing that there's a different way of having faith. So, interested in your thoughts.
That's a great question. Thank you. I remember throughout, they have made June a woman of faith, and I think there's real intention behind that because the show's not criticising religion, it's criticising fanaticism and hypocritical co-opting of faith to
bad faith interpretations.
Absolutely, yes. Yeah, I have noticed it's coming in again, but I feel like maybe she lost it a little bit when she went to Canada because she probably lost her way a little bit. But no, I think there was very intentionally a choice to make her a woman of faith.
I think that was really smart of the show.
Yeah.
Because it could have made a lot of people write the show off potentially. And I remember the first time we got a sense of her faith, it's been dropped out in throughout like the seasons. And I remember the first time thinking, wait, what? I'm being really quite shocked by her faith or expression of it. But yeah, now I think it's a very smart decision. I think it's quite a beautiful, actually, way to have formulated her character.
Yeah. And, you know, she christened Hannah back in the day. I think Ollie even was surprised she's not a woman of faith at all. But yeah.
She's the cranky atheist, her mother.
Yeah, yeah. And I think there was maybe some conversation about how could she still have faith when, you know, she's trapped in that. But, yeah, they still maintained that she understood it wasn't because they were, well, they're not really religious people, of course, are they? But, yeah, a couple of true believers, but, don't write them all off. No, I think it was really smart.
Yeah, and has allowed that parallel with Serena to exist throughout the whole series as well, because they both have their faith and they both have their different interpretations of it, and it does emphasise the importance of moderate religion in the face of fundamentalism.
Yeah, great question. Thank you. Oh, lovely teal frock. Yeah, okay.
Well, I was talking with some of the other wives not that long ago. And we're a little perplexed that Serena and Fred were together for such a long time. And Fred had done the ceremony so many times with June, and a pregnancy never eventuated. So then Serena and Fred went off on their little trip, and she drove the car and all of that. And part of that was actually Serena meeting up with Mark Tuello. Now, the wives and I really don't like to talk about these sorts of things. But there's always just been this niggling little thought, who is Noah's father?
I don't know that we have a definitive answer, but I love this fan theory.
That's
so
right.
Much.
That's right.
It's brilliant.
Spin it
and
off.
It's a good question.
Tuella does have a habit of popping up whenever she leaves a man, doesn't he?
Yeah. He's always had eyes for
her. That great scene in this series where he burst into Lawrence's house, it just went into slow mo and he's. And June's Serena's watching him.
Yeah, yeah. And just that lingering, I'll come find you. Yeah, a little halting in the way he said it. Yeah, we saw that. Yeah,
I love
and
it.
The detail that the ex-wife is in Hawaii.
Yeah, so. Definitely single. I don't know. But I'm going to go with that. That's more interesting than Fred.
Yeah. Maybe we need a Serena and Tuello spin-off series.
Oh, my God. The other commander. She always ends up with commander, so it's maybe.
That's right.
Hello.
Hi, guys. Hi, I just want to start by saying thank you. You guys have always been there at the end of every episode to turn to when there's no one in my life that's been there. But now there are these lovely ladies that I've met today, so moving forward for the Testaments, we'll definitely be in touch. I did have a reflection on that last moment of Serena at the refugee camp and how what she was saying was trying to convince herself of the position that she was in and her coming to terms with that. And I loved the contrast between her either deciding that she was nothing or she was everything to Noah. And she really kind of made that decision in that few seconds. It was beautiful. My question is, with the Testaments, what are your predictions moving forward and how do you see the book playing out or what's going to be different?
You do know we're rubbish at predictions, right?
I just like raise my hand. Which is, on reflecting about how sad I was that we didn't really see Hannah in the finale, I'm landing on a place where I'm actually kind of glad, and I'm glad that June didn't save her, because I really love the idea of the Testaments where her two daughters save each other. And I just think that is really, really nice. And I think I'm going to really enjoy watching it, and I'm going to cry buckets. It's going to be great.
Yeah, I've been rewatching Handmaid so much, I haven't gone back and read the Testaments again. I'm a little rusty on it, so I...
Yeah, oh, I one prediction. I hope we see more of Ava in the Testaments. Darcy Carden, her character. I don't know if that's a prediction, that's a hope.
My question is, so in my opinion, I feel that the difference between Lydia and Serena is that Lydia is a true believer and Serena is kind of in it for the clout. And so my question to you guys is, do you agree? And do you think that can then give people inspiration for how to be more activist in their lives to prevent, say, a Gilead occurring?
I disagree that I think that I think Lydia is a true believer as well. I think they're both true believers. And I would say maybe to like Lydia's credit, what Serena wants is credit. But I think Lydia is actually a true... I don't think she's just in it for power. I think she actually is
doing it. That's what she was saying.
Oh, okay, in that case, I fully agree with you.
I think they're both true believers. Serena just has the added in it for the clout. Like, she's got the added narcissism that goes with it.
Is that what I just said?
I'm rushing up. It's been a long 9 years.
Jeremy, can you just cut this out? I think it'd be really great.
Definitely with Serena, we got a little hint of her backstory this season with her dad, who, you know, appeared to be a pastor. That was a weird bit, wasn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm out of words. It's a weird bit, wasn't it?
Yeah, the preacher. And there was clearly neglect there. And, lay it on guilt as well, that there was... Time had clearly passed while she was focusing on the rise and rise of Gilead and herself within it. So that kind of... I think a lot of the guilt fueled her as well. To your question, that's great, kind of what are the lessons from that? Well, I guess her faith, she was so performative... in, you know, standing up and saying grace, and that just the, it was always the optics of making the pronouncements and projecting her faith into a situation. But then the way she evolved to some of the more spontaneous, quiet prayers when she actually thought that June was going to die with Lawrence and things. But I think the phoniness of people who are so performative with their faith. Yeah, I mean, just I wish people would be more aware of that and just kind of see through it so much. And just because someone is saying a prayer, it doesn't mean that their heart's all in it. And yeah, if people could just see through that a little bit more and, you know, just have faith, just read people better than just the words they're saying, I think is, I don't know, it's not very illuminating, but that's my thought.
And I think with Lydia, she kind of conflates her faith and her religion with faith in the system.
And she
defers to the system too much as the stand-in for her religion, and that's where she goes wrong, and that's what she slowly learns to see around.
Serena is a politician and Lydia is a foot soldier. They're playing different roles in the same sort of thing.
First of all, thank you very much. It's been a privilege to listen to you all these years. What I wanted to say is, having this opportunity to witness this with everybody, I'm going to start crying.
That'll set us off.
Yeah. I'm trying really hard not to. Okay.
Sorry. To be collective, to enjoy a show that we have the privilege of watching, especially on a free service, it's an amazing opportunity. Anyway, I'll digress. What I wanted to say is, having watched it again, like your podcast, you always allowed us to see more in the episode. And watching today, I recognize that June comes to the house wearing green. I don't think she's ever worn green in the series. And green is the opposite of red. And so for me, it was like, oh, this is a new chapter, new beginning. So similar, I wanted to think, okay, yes, I have read the Testaments, and we had my workbook club we read The Handmaid's Tale again. And one of my colleagues, he hasn't watched any of the seasons. And he said, should I read the Testaments now? And I said, park that, let me watch the final episode.
and we'll discuss that. And I went back to her and, okay, now you have to watch the whole season, all six seasons, and we'll revisit that. Because I said, yes and no. It's like we jump ahead, and so we know what the ending is going to be, and again, we don't know how the journey is going to be there. And I know you mentioned, Nat, that you won't have female protagonists in that coming up straight away, but I think we will again. So my question is, okay, let's go to fan casting. Who do we want to see in this estimate? Who do we see now that we think, fuck, yes, I want to see you on my TV. I want to celebrate you and everything that you can bring, because we need that. We need to recognize heroes in another medium, because that doesn't necessarily happen in our life now. So we have to get the spark and joy from wherever we can get.
That's right. Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you.
First of all, I thought the green coat, like people were talking about how it's a call to the testaments, which is great, but I did not consider that it is the opposite of red on the color wheel, right? That's frickin' brilliant. You know, she wore red in that home and now she's back in green. The other part of the question.
The casting. Fantasy casting.
Well, they've kind of released photos of the cast. Not official, like kind of in the writer's room, like rehearsal kind of stuff, not an official photo thing. Who do we want to see? I don't know. I mean, I definitely want to see Anne Dowd.
Yeah.
And we will.
Yeah.
But I don't...
Oh, Naomi. Yeah, that's interesting. The way she handed her over, is she staying to play a role? Eva Carradine?
Yeah, do you know, I haven't thought too much about that. Who do I want to see next?
I'm excited to see the Pearl Girls.
Yes.
Which are a big thing in the Testaments, but aren't part of this Gilead world that we've seen.
Yes.
So beyond particular cast coming through from The Handmaid's Tale, I'm interested in that extra world building that the Testaments will bring.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it really opens it up for a lot of young female characters, like a lot of young female actors. Because there are so many TV shows where young men get a role. God, there are so many like World War II movies and fighter pilots, and there's just like men, like wall to wall. And it's just like, how many shows do we have where there are just so many women in them, you know? And so all of a sudden, like all these young up-and-coming actors are going to have a chance to try out to be all the Pearl Girls and being in... being under Lydia's love and care.
Actually, I hope we see Esther. Maybe we get to see Esther in the Testament.
That is true.
You know? That would be really nice.
Green, by the way, in gemology.
Here we go.
It's just like, I'm thinking about emeralds because I just recently wrote an article on emeralds and I had to look into green. And green is like the symbol of renewal and hope and rebirth and new growth and, you know, all these. So I can be, some countries use emeralds for weddings because it's a sign of starting anew together. So I thought it was really nice that June was wearing a green coat. I didn't realise it tied into the Testaments though, so now it's got a whole other layer. So yeah. That's great.
She's already starting. Theory, I love it.
Hi. I noticed in this episode that all the flashbacks with June and Hannah, like at the aquarium and at the fair, Luke wasn't in any of them.
That's true.
Which is unusual because it's often been the three of them.
Yeah.
And what do you think that says about future going forward?
I like that, you know, we had that kind of resolution between them and that they're clearly making plans that they haven't talked to the other one about. It's kind of like, oh, I'm going doing this. Oh, I'm going doing do this. Yeah, and I feel like June's obviously in that headspace as well. Even her imaginings are not there. he's not there.
That's a really good pickup, actually. I hadn't thought of that. And I think it does tell us about the state of their relationship and where June's head is at. You know, she's not really thinking of getting her family back together so much as just getting her daughter. Her and Luke are, you know, in this new phase of their relationship, which is not necessarily husband and wife, boyfriend, girlfriend, partners, or whatever.
Yeah.
I think that probably alludes to that.
Yeah, they essentially separate at the end of the final scene. It's a separation. Mm-hmm. They're going their own way, but they're kind of at peace with that. And they know that they'll come back together one day to find Hannah, but it's kind of hypothetical at that point.
I actually think that it's kind of, in some ways... not really about Luke at all. Like, we don't have to read into it about the fact that he's not there, because what I realised when I rewatched season six, I just binged watched season six, and which, by the way, I highly recommend, because it moves so quickly and all of a sudden you're at episode nine and it's like, oh, we were just hanging out week after week. And but what really brought home to me was, like, season six, as well as the whole show, has been such an ode to motherhood. Like, whether it's between Holly and June to her daughters, I'm sure there are other shows, but, like, there are, to have a show which just puts motherhood and a mother's fierce love and the need to protect and care for her child, to have that, I guess, it's to see my life reflected like that, it has been really, really beautiful. So I kind of liked that it was very much, all her flashbacks were, didn't have Luke in them, and I didn't miss him. I'm really...
I did. I think I'm on the record. I think there was too much Luke in the because I will... I think I said I'd say a bit more on that, but I feel like when... They say it as well, but, you know, like, they're so traumatised by everything they've gone through. Of course, he is a survivor of trauma too and has that kind of survivor guilt throughout. But when June gets back... The way they are together is just so, like, a clue about these two aren't going to make it. Remember when she gave her testimony at the, was it the UN? But when she finally got to say her piece to the world in front of Fred and Serena, she explicitly asked Luke not to come, but he did. But not only did he come, he was very prominently there to show her he was there, which, you know, in his eyes probably is a form of support, but also that could have absolutely thrown her off. And, I don't know, that was never discussed, but it was kind of like, hey, like, just sit on the back if you're going to come, whatever. But, yeah, just like moments like that where it's kind of like chipping away that, like, there's just, they're not really getting each other at the moment. Yeah. Anyway, that was my Luke point, that it's a little bit too much Luke in there for me.
Hi. I'd just like to echo everyone's deep gratitude for the podcast. Amazing. Love it. Throughout watching the series, I am a very proud auntie of six little people, and I can't help but think of them as I watch this. And I can't wait till they're old enough for me to show it to them without traumatizing them. But I suppose I just wanted to ask you if there is a message or a theme or something that you would like the next generation to take from this incredible show and this incredible story?
It's a good question.
It's funny, I've been working in feminist spaces for a long time, and I'm now about to turn 48. So I have gone through, I've experienced it myself, and then I've seen it of the women who have come behind me. And you start out in your 20s and you think everything's equal and everything's fine, and then life just seems to, like, chip away at you, and you start to realise, oh, this isn't fair, you know, or, and then you have a baby and you go, oh my God, this isn't fair. And it all starts to add up, and it's been so fascinating at my age now to watch women, fascinating, and also, I'm frankly very, very sad, to watch women realise that, like, so many things were stacked against them. And it's kind of heartbreaking to think there's still, like, it's almost like every generation comes through and figures it out again for the first time. And it's like, oh, we've already done that. So, but we didn't have a show like this when I was growing up. And so I do wonder if having TV like this and having discussions like this means that they kind of, it's like they're getting the advance notes early. So, I hope it helps.
Yes, that's a great answer. And the way it does cycle back on itself as well, and, you know, obviously the source material is drawn from history, there's that kind of factual basis that we were talking about, that, yeah, like, everything in it is referenced from the real world. I feel like it is going to have that kind of longevity of relevance, depressing relevance, beyond this kind of particular moment. Yeah, and I feel like, you know, that's the fact with streaming, like, you know, it'll live on. And, I mean, you know, there is another series coming. So, yeah, I think there's hints in there. But also, like, just for people watching it, whatever gender you are, I think there's just kind of ways that it's relatable to so many people in different ways. Like, I'm not a mother on the panel, and it's kind of like, it's, you know, as a woman, as a daughter, as a, you know, just a woman walking in the world, there's so much in there that just kind of cuts deep. And I think that's kind of what I've loved being on the podcast with you guys. Am I getting teary? I think I am. I cannot ruin this glow up. No, I can't. But it's,
yeah, I just feel like, you know, we bring so much perspective, but it's we go to our corners on our characters and, like, well, we're very passionate when we talk about them, but it's just kind of this, like, respect of getting a different point of view. And I know there's a lot of men who watch it too, but just that the comments we get are the way that this kind of, you just feel it, and that's the skill of the way they've made this show. So I think that that's a very roundabout way of answering your question, but I just think, like, there is something there as a growing up, no matter what your experience is, that there's just kind of watch outs, and it's not a message program, but it is without having to ram it home. Yeah.
The thought I'm having, it's not really an answer to that question, but what I'm thinking as you guys are talking is, like, just how profoundly grateful I am for art. It's not a very, like, well-formed thought, but, like, God, how powerful is art, and the chance to talk about it and debrief about it and analyze it is just such a beautiful thing to do, and to be able to process the crap that happens in the world and the crap that happens in our own lives via this art is such a privilege. It's been such a joy talking to these women over the years, honestly. It's been great.
And I think that the takeaway for the next generation is there in that final episode. And I don't know if you still have this queued up, Jez. We didn't play this earlier, but it's there in the conversation that June has with Holly at the end, if you want to play that little clip.
But the thing is, Mom, I'm not safe. And neither are you. And they are never going to stop coming for us. And even when we're gone, they're gonna come for our children and our grandchildren. Fighting may not get us everything, but we don't have a choice. Because not fighting is what got us Gilead in the first place.
So about Gilead with whoever you will, and there's your answer.
Stay vigilant is the message.
So one thing we haven't talked about, which is actually my biggest takeaway from this season in particular, is Serena's relationship, if you'd call it, with Wharton. That scene where she sees the handmaid and then she leaves, that has stuck in my mind more than anything in the whole show. And it got me thinking, well, why did Wharton choose her to do this? And I've seen a lot online about it, but I think if we're talking about how relevant the show can be and will be, it's that there's always going to be marriage, and there's always going to be husbands like that who think they're good men, who sweet talk you and love bomb you. And I wish there were more younger people who realized that was out there. But I want to hear your thoughts on Wharton. But one thing that I took away was that it was never about having children. It was never about fertility, because as Serena said, I'm fertile. Why do we need this handmaid? And it was always about oppression, which I think is something June says as well at some point in the show. But yeah, can we talk about Wharton for a little bit?
Yeah, okay. No, great point. Because he's introduced in the first episode, isn't he? Because Nick gets out of prison or whatever for that strange, you know, he's punching up Lawrence, and then gets home, and then Big Daddy Wharton is in town from DC and seems cool. Like, he seems to know that Nick has got some history with someone. And yeah, it's like a weird intro that, of course, we know something's not right with this guy. Yeah, I love the was nine, where he and June finally have that kind of conversation. And yeah, the difference in their perception of God and him presuming to know what God would want, and just kind of that, like, the phony baloney faith, and June coming from a God of love and him coming from this, you know, Old Testament kind of shit. Yeah, and that shown in his prayer. Yeah, just his, you're right, I don't think it's about actually having a child. It's a tokenistic Serena, like, she's a bit of a trophy, being Miss Serena, Mrs. Waterford. That's not a...
He seemed like a true believer to me. Like, I didn't think most of the commanders were. They were enjoying Jezebels and Rolexes and Mercedes and having the most fertile handmaid in all of Gilead. Like, oh, my God.
Yeah.
But he actually, I think one of the reasons because he confused us this season, you know, and we're like, is he a bad guy? Is he kind of got, he's a little bit of a good guy. And you can see why Serena fell for it too. Like, it's, I think that was totally in some ways believable that she would. But he seemed to me to be an interesting one to add, because I thought that he was a true believer as well, his interpretation. And the one that made him comfortable, like, funnily enough, the interpretation he likes seems to be the one that gives him all of the power, and he was quite happy with that. But anyway, did you?
I just thought it was a really great beat in the story. I thought it was really clever how they, kind of showed you the love bombing and the bait and switch. I just thought that was really clever, and it was a great turn when we get to that scene. That scene stuck with me this season as well. And her acting, just, I said it in the pod, but, like, freaking brilliant to watch her face fall. She's so full of hope and here's my new life, and then comes crashing down.
Yeah, because we ummed and ahed over his alignment with New Bethlehem at the start. We couldn't quite get a read on him. And it did seem we were being led down this path with Serena. Maybe he really does like her and respect her. And I think with the hindsight of debriefing on that scene where she leaves him, you realize that it's almost as if he's singled her out as a woman of power and to, like, own her and claim her is his own way to one-up her and retain that power. It's almost like he's singled her out because she's so independent and powerful as a woman in Gilead.
Caging
to bring her down.
And I think, you know, flashback to the first season, that's a great match for Serena Joy. Like, that is Fred without the Fredness of you know what I mean? So it's kind of like, let's make Gilead. Like, she would have been in, like, Flynn. Like, it would have been absolutely just the dream Gilead match. But it shows the evolution in her. She still wasn't there yet, because she was okay with handmaids, but just not one in her household. And she was okay with them. Or she was more looking for a plan after they retire. So she certainly wasn't looking to eradicate handmaids yet. But yeah, at that point, it did show she was on the way, on the journey, at least. Yeah.
And his character, by the way, is, to hark back to an earlier question we had, made me so glad that June is a woman of faith, because in the end they were both just talking at each other in Bible verses, you know. And I somehow still understood everything they were saying. I don't know how. But, like, you almost needed to have that conversation about religion that they had, and those two characters could do it together.
Yeah.
Yeah, nice.
Hi. Thanks again for the show. And it was really helpful for me because I don't look very deeply at the show, and you guys have all these, like, insights and things I haven't thought of, and a lot of things I just miss. Guys have been able to explain them and the symbolism and the throwbacks and all that. So thank you again. And I was a latecomer to the podcast, so praise be. I think mine is more of a comment. You guys did discuss about the closure between June and her mum, Holly, which I felt was very satisfying. But to me, there was a kind of a little bit more to it. So it seemed like a closure about, you know, how June felt abandoned as a child and being left and all that sort of thing. So that was reconciled. But to me, it was also a bit more than that. It was that her mother was actually going out and fighting for justice and equality and doing the action. So I see it as a child, June got to see that. And I think what you see can have a massive influence on who. And so for that scene, for me, not only was it, oh, I get the abandonment now and the reason behind it, but it was also, this is why I am who I am now.
Yeah.
Yeah, so mine was more of a comment, but also, you know, what you think about it.
Yeah, thank you. I love that, because it is the case. And I think that's what set off the fear in June about what Hannah was missing as a result of not being in her life. And I think that, like, fueled a lot of her fears. Yeah, I agree. That, I mean, I am on the record as thinking that June maybe needed to die to have that imprint on Hannah, and yeah, okay, whoops. But she didn't need to. There was a way to shore up her legacy so that Hannah one day will get word of how powerful her mum was. Yeah, I thought she needed to physically see it, but
yeah, just I think learning her mum's story in whatever way, shape or form that comes, hopefully she can read one day to be able to read it. Yeah, I agree. I think it's kind of like that, what you're seeing can then help shape you, who you are, which of course is horrific if you're a child growing up in Gilead and that's all you know, to then create that down generations. But
I haven't processed yet. There's a part that I haven't quite nailed in my mind of how I think about it. And it strikes me as really sad that that for June's mum to fight at the time when June was growing up meant that she wasn't in June's life. The beginning of season six, when she's on the train with Serena, Serena says to June, like, I'm sure you'll be reconciled with your family soon. And we end season six and June is on her own. Like, she's, Luke's going a different direction, Hannah is still in Gilead and her mum and Nicole, and she's now leaving her mum and Nicole behind. So she doesn't have her family with her, and it's almost like this. And then Emily as well, oh, I love Emily. Emily as well, she has been working as a Martha and she has had to leave her wife and child behind. And I'm just like, and I don't know how I haven't figured out how I feel about that message yet, that in order to really fight, you have to do it alone and leave your family behind. Like, look, if you asked me earlier, Fiona, about like any threads that we felt hadn't been resolved, look, no pressure on the testaments, but I'm going to need them to come through for me with something on that.
I'll echo everybody else here. Just thank you so much for being on the journey with us and really giving us great analysis about what you were saying before, Fiona, about the quality of this production. I've worked in film and TV. I studied film and TV at uni, and it really is quite an extraordinary piece of television. And going on from that, I don't know about anybody else in here, but I'm so ready to just start watching again from the beginning. And I know that SBS doesn't have the rights at the moment to the first five seasons, but because you started at season two, is there any way possible that you could go back and do a pod for season one? Please, pretty please, pretty please.
That's crazy. Something to consider.
That's a good.
Well, yeah, now maybe it is a rewatch because now we know how the, maybe it is.
Our predictions always are going to be so good.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Now our predictions.
Absolutely.
You're going to have a real shock when we go from season one to see our season two recap, which was our season one then, when we were just figuring it out.
But yeah, I know. If anyone hasn't actually watched the show and they listen to that first, it's going to sound better, I hope. And then go to us plodding along, not really knowing what the hell's going on.
It's a lovely thought to end on.
That's hilarious. Thank you.
Hello. Thank you so much for today. It's been really insightful and so nice to join in thoughts with everyone. My question relates to Serena, who is my favourite character in the show. Obviously not because I agree with all her decisions, but because I think the depth of that role is really intriguing. I know Margaret Atwood writes a piece that she's written, Spotty-Handed Villainesses, talks about the depth of women in literature, and that was really interesting to me. My question is, June shows incredible forgiveness and forgives Serena at the end. I don't think I'm there yet, even though I do love Serena, but have you forgiven Serena for her her journey across the six seasons?
That's it. Like, for you, Fee, because you watched it recently, so yeah, her horrors of the early seasons are a bit quite distant for me. So
yeah, no, I had forgotten some of it, particularly like when it got really brutal in season two, when June was pregnant particularly. It had been a while, so that brought it home. But I think that she genuinely did get to a place eventually. It took some nudging. It took a lot to get her there. There is actual contrition. Like, I believe that she has remorse. I think it's interesting, kind of like Lawrence had that kind of original culpability as well, and he gets the hero's ending where it's kind of Serena is still, yeah, but is she really sorry? It's interesting. I think I don't really have anything else other than that it is interesting, but he did more. He sacrificed his life for it. She hasn't ever come quite to that point. She threw two husbands to the wolves across the series, but I feel like, you know, she hasn't had that cost to the same degree as he has, and certainly with losing Eleanor. Anyway, I think so, because I think it you felt her get there eventually, because there were a few attempts where she was trying to tell June that she was saying she was sorry, but you could tell she wasn't genuinely. And then finally it actually felt like it was true remorse. So, yeah, I think I do. If June does, I do. I mean, yeah.
Well, I mean, I'll say, I think I can forgive her because June forgave her.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, the reason why June can forgive her is because June, frankly, is terrifying. Like, she has, like, murdered multiple people, and this, like, this season, the most casual thing she did was throw a man's body in a furnace, and she just, like, walked away, and, like, she didn't think twice about it, and I was like, she's got no trauma on that at all, and I was just like, that's amazing. Serena needs June to forgive her, like, you know, like. And June can now be the big person because she's got a lot of bodies under her belt, so she's, like, you know, she's fine.
Same.
Yeah, top that. Well, we are going to be around, you know, afterwards as well for more questions, or, you know, just to meet you all, because, yeah, I don't know how ill, here I go, but just over the course of these, I don't know how long it's taken, but over 5 seasons of doing our podcast, you know, I've loved it just because I get to talk about my favorite show with just brilliant people, and we love it, and we do crack up, and Jeremy cuts that bit out. And there was the first season where, the second season when Heidi had hashtag baby Greta in the room with us. And, you know, youngest podcaster, I would say, in the world, nestled against her mother, talking about The Handmaid's Tale on her parental leave. It was just like, what? But, yeah, just kind of though, we just absolutely love this show, and I think we love the perspectives that we each bring. But to then just actually know that people were connecting with that, because, you know, recording in a windowless room at SBS, and we were doing it at 7 a.m. and 7 p.m. and whenever the hell we could all get together to do it, just to know that there are people out there who enjoyed it and found something from it. And maybe, you know, some people very kindly say that it kind of helped watch TV maybe a little bit differently and just dig a little deeper into the craft of it. I don't know. I can't get the words for that. It just makes it so special. Thank you. Yeah. Okay, now I've had a chance to compose myself, I wanted to come back on and acknowledge the people who made that live show possible. We are so grateful to everyone who came along to the event and asked those amazing questions. Thank you to those of you who travelled distances to get there. It was a joy to meet you. And if you dressed up, thank you so much. The wives, the handmaids, the lady who came as the cake, and Jane, our Rita, who made each of us slices of clay wedding cake. I will cherish those. And if you weren't there and you're a little bit thrown by what was going on in that audio, do take a look at my Instagram at anythingbutfifi for a close-up. That cake's a work of art. Thank you to our colleagues who volunteered to be handmaids on the day and who donned those robes and went very method and walked as one. You were our June, Janine, Moira, Emily, Alma and Brianna, but we know you as Madeline Condis, Beth Hadfield, Eleanor James, Alex Hippolito, Beck Brody and Maria Cananova. You were incredible. And our army of volunteers, ushers and crew. The mighty Kelly Falzon, Kay Warren, my beloved Simon Foster, Bridget Ryan, Bronwyn Norsati, Colleen Meldrum, Marilyn Eccles and Sandra Biston. You had our backs all day and worked your asses off on your day off. We stand on the shoulders of giants. To our Master of Ceremonies, SBS General Counsel and Handmade Superfan Theo Dorazak, you brought lols and props and even dressed up as an O'Connor person, because why not? Thank you for being an excellent warm-up act and the best hype man we know. And biggest of all thanks go to Heidi Island, Natalie Handley, Sana Kadar, and the best ears in the business, Jeremy Wilmot. I don't think I have to say why. Eyes on Gilead is an SBS Australia production. We recognise the traditional owners of country throughout Australia, and our live event was produced on the lands of the Gadigal people of the Eora Nation. This podcast is produced by me, Fiona Williams, and edited and mixed by Jeremy Wilmot. We are now going to go away and think about what comes next. We'd love to continue this journey with you in some capacity, and we'll keep you updated on this feed in the hope that you'd like to join us.
Also, be sure to follow us on our social channels. I'm at Anything But Fifi on most of them. Natalie is at Nat Hambly on Instagram and Threads. And Sana is Sana _ Kadar on Insta and Threads. Though she doesn't check them all that much. So I confess that I got too carried away in the moment and forgot to ask all of our attendees to join me in a rousing sign-off, bellowing like June on the gallows. But you'll just have to imagine that, because it would have been great. So, until next time, whenever that may be and whatever it may involve, don't let the bastards grind you down.
In any case, you are off duty. You need to get some rest.